Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Here's the 1-2. Swing and a fly ball well hit to left field. Back goes Vogt. He's at the warning track. He's at the wall. He's looking up, and there it goes. Kurt Suzuki with a long two-run homer. Halfway up the bleachers in left field, that's number 12 on the season for the Nationals catcher, and they have doubled their lead on one big swing. The Nationals 4 and the Giants nothing.
Hello, welcome into another post-game edition of the Racing Presidents Podcast, a West Coast edition as the Nats win again. They top the Giants on the road 5-3. Sean Doolittle gets the save. Anibal Sanchez earns the win. He is now 7-6 on the season. I'm Tim Shovers, live in our Bethesda podcast studios and joined on the phone by our Nationals insider, Todd Dybas. And Todd, Anibal Sanchez, start of the season was rough, but yet again tonight, another quality start by him. He only allows one run in six innings, and this guy has just been flat out a different pitcher in the second half of the season.
Yeah, his ERA is down to 3.67, and really during the course of the game and watching this, you thought his line might actually end up better because he was so efficient early in the game, but he pitches six innings, allows four hits, one earned run, two runs total because of an error that he made that he surely regrets. I mean, he was up 3-4 runs at the time and worried about picking over to first with Kevin Pillar standing there and gave him two bases when he threw it away. Probably could have ignored the runner and just kept doing what he was doing, but, you know, just such a epic turnaround for him. June 2.76 ERA across five starts. July 3.72 across five starts, more than serviceable for your fourth guy. And then August coming in, you know, he had a good outing, his first outing in August. So a 1.50 ERA to start August, which was also a six inning outing. And just, he has pitched really well. I wish we could pinpoint exactly what was different between the start of the season and here, but certainly seems that Anibal Sanchez has figured something out. He still throws a variety of pitches and just been extremely effective for a couple months now.
He started the season 0-6. He hasn't lost since in L.A., May 10th. I mean, that's almost 3 months ago and has won seven straight decisions. I mean, really, the only bad outing he's had in that time was his last one against Atlanta, where he gave up 10 hits and four runs in five innings. But, I mean, you look at what he's done post All-Star break when they've only had one Scherzer start against Colorado, you know, it's been a lot of good stuff and, you know, giving up three runs sometimes, but he's doing quality start after quality start when the rotation's been at its thinnest.
Yeah. And again, this is your number four starter behind your very high paid guys. So it's been a huge boost to the Nationals. It's been a huge factor in their turnaround since they were 19-31. Anibal Sanchez getting his act together, especially with the fifth starter situation in flux. And then, as you mentioned, Max Scherzer going on the injured list, and we're not quite sure when we're going to see him next. I mean, just a rollout, a veteran guy who, you know, is going to be smart about what he's doing. Most of the time he's going to be effective with what he's doing. And it's just has to be a great comfort and security blanket for Davey Martinez to have that guy at the back end of the rotation.
We always kill the bullpen when they don't do well. Tonight, they did very well. Sean Doolittle and Fernando Rodney each run scathed in their normal spots in the eighth and ninth inning. Hunter Strickland did get a blemish on his resume as a National. He gave up a run. It's the first run that any of the three new relievers have given up. Of course, asterisk next to Elias, as it only pitched two-thirds of an inning. And on top of that, you have the irony of Hunter Strickland pitching in a Nats uniform in San Francisco. But, Todd, I feel like, you know, you look at some of the losses post the trade, like we had, you know, they got routed in one of them. You know, the 18-7 game doesn't even count. Like, I feel like there's just a new level of confidence to the bullpen, even despite the Elias injury, and it just wasn't there up until July 31st. Do you agree with me, or am I reading too much into a small sample size?
No, I mean, I agree with you. Well, A, we're starting from the worst bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball.
Correct.
There better be more confidence after you trade for three new guys and plug them in there. B, it's just there's vastly more options down there. You know, you see Hunter Strickland, Fernando Rodney, and Doolittle tonight. Well, last night you saw Daniel Hudson come in and have, and, you know, and be live. And you can use Wander Suero and Tanner Rainey. And, you know, obviously when Elias gets back, then he's another option for you. He's a, you know, a can be a 4-6 out guy if you want to push him to that limit. So just so much more versatility down there, so much more liveliness, so fewer dead spots. Basically no dead spots at this point. I mean, Matt Grace has the role that he has, but this isn't someone who you're flatly terrified to put in the game, you know. And this all, we're discussing this, Tim, on the day that Kyle Bearclaw was designated for assignment. And you look back to the offseason when, you know, Mike Rizzo constructed the bullpen around Trevor Rosenthal and Kyle Bearclaw handling things in front of Sean Doolittle. And now it's August 6th. It's August 7th as we talk because of the West Coast game. And both of those guys are currently out of the organization. That's astonishing.
For the Giants, his seventh career start of the outfield. Swinging a fly ball, shallow right. Yastrzemski coming on. Can't get there. Drops in a base hit. He bobbles the ball. Rendon scores. Soto was already on his way to third. Holding it first is Suzuki. With a single on a pop fly down the right field line, he comes through with a clutch two-out hit and his 41st run batted in of the year.
On the offensive front, the star tonight was Kurt Suzuki. He had three RBIs, a two-run homer, and also had an RBI in the first inning. 12 home runs. He's hitting just under 270, and, you know, he's nearing 50 RBIs. This for a guy that at the start of the season was a backup catcher. Just sort of your thoughts on Kurt Suzuki and where his role is in early August.
Yeah, I mean, if you went around the major leagues and polled GMs and said, hey, the guy who's quote-unquote your backup catcher or kind of, you know, the 40% part of your 60-40 equation is going to have an 804 OPS and finish the year maybe with like 17, 18 home runs and be a good guy in the clubhouse, I think they would all be dancing in the streets, you know, learning that information. So
where do I sign?
Yeah, exactly. And that's been the situation for Kurt Suzuki. Obviously, a pretty savvy guy behind the plate with calling pitches. He's really thoughtful back there, has a good understanding of sequencing and what's going on. This is 3 years in a row now that he's been able to hit double-digit home runs, something that you never would have thought of when he came through Washington the first time. And it's just sound. It's just sound operation. He's not great defensively with throwing guys out and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just, again, very similar to Anibal Sanchez. When you put Kurt Suzuki on the field, you have a very, very good idea of what's going to occur. And across 162 games, that's not a quality to be underestimated.
A few notes from the game. Is Drubal Cabrera, freshly signed by the Nationals, freshly picked up and added to the roster. He grounded into a double play in the ninth inning in a pitch hitting spot. So he has taken his spot on the team. He took the spot of Adrian Sanchez. On the other side of San Francisco, Joe Panic, Todd, I don't know if you saw this, was DFA'd, for a lot of our listeners who don't follow NL West baseball very closely, I'm sure we're really surprised because kind of the last time you heard from him, he was a really good player. So, and they just required Scooter Jeanette from Cincinnati. But I want you to touch upon this. Pre-game, we found out that Austin Voth threw for the first time off the mound since he went on the IL. What is the significance of that?
Yeah, it's that he's making progress. So I think both Scherzer, you know, even though things didn't get portrayed as they went great for Scherzer recently, but both him and both are making progress. For both to be back off a mound after they stopped him from throwing is a really good sign. And we saw Eric Fetty in follow Joe Ross. So Joe Ross pitched Friday, pitched pretty well. The walks were real high, but otherwise some of the peripherals were pretty good. We saw Eric Fetty pitch well to open the series against the Giants. and we'll see Joe Ross to close this series against the Giants. They can move, the Nationals can move to this place where, well, now do we have three viable guys to kind of stopgap while Scherzer's out and figure out this fifth spot? Obviously, you know, about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about this as a major issue, especially heading up to the trade deadline. Is there something that's going to happen here? Because none of those guys, well, Fetty and Ross were not pitching well, and they didn't even look like number five starters in the major leagues, but they've been better recently, obviously facing an offense like San Francisco, which is one of the league's worst, helps, and we'll see how that helps Joe Ross tomorrow.
Speaking of that, we do have Joe Ross pitching, as you said, tomorrow, a 3:45 Eastern start. So this is the final West Coast game of the season, Todd, for Nats fans. So something to keep in mind, and also for people who do daily podcasts regarding the regarding the Washington Nationals. And I do want to quickly, before we go, touch upon the latest going on in the NL East, because there's a lot going on now. There's more to keep track of than we had a few weeks ago. Atlanta won. They won big in Minnesota. The Nats remain six back. The Nats are still atop the wild card. Philly is also on the West Coast. They're in Arizona. They're, as we tape, they're three outs away from losing. They're down 8-4 to the Diamondbacks. But, Todd, our last thing here, you can't sleep on the Mets, who won again tonight. They've won five in a row. They remain 2.5 back of the Nats. And a three-game series in Flushing between these two teams is not that far away.
No, yeah, coming up this weekend, but guess what, Tim? I'm not buying a lot of what the Mets are selling here after beating up on the Pirates a little bit and then beating up on the Miami Marlins. Okay, go ahead. They beat the White Sox before that. They remain a big shrug for me, and I think as the competition gets crisper for them, if the Nationals, followed by the Braves, followed by the Royals, which is not crisp competition, but then the Indians, the Braves, the Cubs, and the Phillies, I think we're going to learn a lot of things suddenly about the Mets that we probably assumed prior.
All fair points. I'm just saying that, A, it's a new team. Yep. You have to scoreboard watch, at least temporarily, if you're a Nats fan.
For sure.
And B, you know, they did get swept previously this year. If they were to get swept while going in with a 2.5 game lead, all of a sudden they would shockingly be behind the Mets, something that was unfathomable 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And, you know, the schedule lurches like this, and the Giants were 2.5 games out of the wild card, I believe, at the start of this series. But a lot of that was built on kind of false outcomes. The underlying numbers around that suggested that what they were doing was unsustainable. We talked about this on this podcast, you know, before the trade deadline and what the Giants should do with their bullpen and what should be believed about them returning to 500. I feel like the Mets are in a very similar spot. They returned to 500, hopped over by two games. They're playing better. The competition's not very good, and it's about to get much, much tougher.
All right, so Nats, Giants, the Nationals look to go for the sweep in San Francisco, 3:45 Eastern first pitch. And Todd, the ERAs combined between Joe Ross and Sean Anderson tomorrow are above 13. Just giving you a heads up there. And before we go, I want to remind you to please check out and subscribe to the Wizards Talk podcast, recently a conversation with John Wall. So please be sure to check that out and subscribe. And rate and review, leave a comment for the Racing Presidents podcast. For Todd, this is Tim. We'll talk to you soon, everyone.
Doolittle sets. Pilar off third. The 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. He went a little bit higher. Another elevated fastball. Doolittle strikes out Sandoval to end the game. Two strikeouts in the inning and pitches around the one-out double, stranding the runner at third. And a Curly W's in the books for a second straight night here in San Francisco. Final score, the Nationals 5, the Giants 3.